Thank you very much for joining us this morning. It's the 13th of January, and Alan and I were chatting so much that I missed the billboard at the top of the hour. So let me just quickly tell you, we have a great show coming up today. We have a lot of good stuff. We're going to talk to John Geiger about the Angel Effect. Comedian Michael Ian Black will join us to discuss his new National Geographic TV series. Susan Rowan will tell us how to work a room, and we'll speak with Olivia Lang about writers and drinking and the connection between those two subjects. Of course, Alan will be in the Congressional Corner with his final installment with Congressman Chris Gibson. We welcome your input on our panel discussion this morning, roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you this morning. Dr. Alan Chartog is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Also, I'm out of breath. Also,
did you have to walk all the way from Alan's office?
Yes, it was right. No, with this very heavy bag over my shoulder,
right? It was the bag's fault. That's right.
Quite onerous. Raymond,
hello.
Good morning.
Hi,
thank you very
everyone.
Much.
Hi, everyone.
And got word late that Libby Post was stuck in an airport in Buffalo or somewhere. She was stuck in an airport and couldn't be with us. So I did the last minute call about an hour before showtime and said, "Hey, Mike, can you do the show?" And Mike came through like a trooper, as he always does. And I wrote Mike a very quick email that just said, "Mike, you're a god to me."
Ah. Very nice.
So I echo that on the air and thank
you.
Well,
I'm glad to be here. Happy to come in.
Great. And this doesn't get you out of tomorrow, by the way. So
I wondered about that.
Okay. It's like, you know, in the church, you know, it's like the holy days of obligation.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. You still have the obligation for Sunday.
It doesn't leave you.
We don't have that in our group.
No.
Yeah. There's ups and downs to all of it. good morning and welcome. And again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us begin with the passing of Ariel Sharon. It happened, late Friday, early Saturday morning here. And so he is now lying in state. And this, of course, was a story that had been expected for a while. He's been very ill for a very long period of time. And it brings up two points. One, of course, is legacy, and the other one is of what, you know, how it shapes future discussions, how it shapes future issues overall in that corner of the world. And Alan, I guess I'm interested in your thoughts on how we view this at the minute.
What? Yeah, that's what I was afraid of, that you were...
Oh, I'm sorry.
My view.
Well, you don't have to...
No, I will. I will. No, I'm just kidding. He was a very powerful symbol of the kind of split that goes on in Israel. You know, there are substantial numbers of people we know, the Chartogs know really well, who really think it's time to make the peace and to do it using the settlements as part of the trade, and he was the guy who, you know, who really did start it all. But he was a pragmatist. I mean, I think that was what I really respected about him, and that was he was capable of doing what he needed to do at any given point in the negotiations. And when he had the stroke, I think it really was a downer, a terrible downer. I don't know that I'll be honest with you guys. I don't really know that that peace is a possibility right now. I don't know that. I know that there are people who think that the two-state solution is here, it's near, that we can do it. But you know, I think Sharon, as probably the greatest hero Barack was and Sharon is a general, and the major role he played is a really a national figure, because the security of Israel always came first to him.
When you think of the future and what this means, I mean, he has not been an active part of the conversation for some time. But obviously, that spirit still exists. So, do you see any major shift coming? Do you think as with his passing, does it clear the way at all?
No, because I think that the right wing side of the Sharon personality is taken up by Netanyahu. So I don't see, any great shift, because if it was there, it would have happened already. You'll remember that I believe I'm right about this, that Sharon beat Netanyahu in order to get the prime ministership. I think that there's a sort of emerging of this absolute need for security in the state of Israel. Hey, we have that in this country. So the idea that it's there, you spend any time there at all, and the population feels surrounded, that they feel somebody could plop a bomb down on them, and that they have with some regularity, and that if anything, they need a strong man who is running things. For his part, Netanyahu keeps signaling that he's ready to make peace, but he doesn't show any real propensity towards doing that.
Mike, any thoughts?
Well, what's remarkable to me is how someone can be so aggressive and so militant early in life and still be more diplomatic and be willing to make compromises that just were unheard of in his earlier career. And I think that, I guess the obvious is that when you have that broad perspective, you gain wisdom and you're able to do it. But also, I think, Alan, you're right. I mean, strategically, it was important to be aggressive earlier, and it was necessary to be conciliatory and contradict many of his own earlier positions later in life.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's been 8 years really since he had the stroke.
Has
had minimal consciousness since then. He died on Saturday afternoon at the age of 85. And when it comes to, I guess I'm curious of the politics in this country of how we are supposed to relate.
Well,
to
it's
that.
Very interesting because. There has been tremendous outpouring from every potential presidential candidate, everybody else. You're quite sure that there is a substantial body of Jewish voters in the United States. Look, I've said it before. Nobody seems to like it, but I'm going to say it one more time. We are a nation groups, and when Cardinal Egan gets to be cardinal, people say, give due deference to that. When Sharon dies, what? If you're a Clinton, are you gonna walk the other way or look the other way? You are not. And so in this country, the outpouring, and I get it on the email all night long. This one said. This one said. This one said. Is predictable because you don't want to be listed among the missing in terms of the solicitation towards the Jewish groups in America. Now, I always ask my students, I always say, so what percentage of Americans are Jewish? And it's very interesting because the answer for all of you out there who may or may not know it is less than 2%.
I'm sorry, in America.
In America.
Jewish in America.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, less than 2%. And yet it is a significant intellect of people who have gotten together, have come to this country. Many have come. Many have been here since Chaim Solomon, since the beginning, and made a contribution. But that doesn't mean that the same thing doesn't exist with other groups also. So if you see a major black leader die, you're going to see the same response in this country. Or if you see, I will bet you a major Indian figure dies, either abroad or here, or you'll see the same kind of response. So, You know, I don't know what to say except that every campaign has a Jewish desk, an Italian desk, probably a Portuguese desk, and they go out and they do their thing. It's very interesting. I remember when Mario Cuomo was the governor, he lost I think it was Rabbi Moshowitz. I may be wrong about the name. And immediately there were telephone calls to me because I was interviewing him, and as if Mario Cuomo ever listened to me about anything. They would say, from rabbis, would say, I want to do that job. I want that job. These are powerful positions. These are powerful groups, and you do not want to make the mistake of alienating them, because if you do, you know, you're going to get jumped. It's that simple. And I don't mean only by Jewish groups. I mean by any group if you offer what can be perceived as insult.
We are going to take a break. Let's pause there for a moment. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts. Doctors Katz and Purdy providing daily and on-call urgent veterinary care 24 hours every day. HampVet.com. Bard College Master of Arts and Teaching Program, offering a 1- and 2-year master's degree and teaching certification. Applications accepted now through April 30th, 2014. Bard.edu/MAT. And Alacrity Frame Workshop, Albany, New York, offering custom framing and local art in the Capital Region. Open every day except Tuesdays. AlacrityFrameWorkshop.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and Mike Spain, a part of our conversation, and we welcome your thoughts as well. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. Moving on to other issues, Iran and a group of six world powers completed a deal on Sunday night that will temporarily freeze much of Tehran's nuclear program starting next Monday, January 20th, in exchange for limited relief from Western economic sanctions. The main elements of the deal, which is to last for 6 months, were announced in November, but its implementation was delayed as negotiators worked out the technical details. So it's good to know that even world leaders, you know, wait to the last minute, right? So
we all do.
Yeah, you procrastinate.
No matter what we do.
Down to the deadline, down a week before the papers do. Yeah.
It's a tough one, I'll tell you right now. He's going to open himself up to a real kind of hell here.
He being?
The president.
Yeah.
And Kerry, who is the front man, you know, on this. Because there will be Republicans, I guarantee you, even though in the old days international relations was always regarded as a sort of untouchable place. You know, you stood behind your president. But these guys are out for so much blood, the Republicans now, that I have very little doubt that he's going to get a lot of criticism for having made too soft a deal.
Mr. Obama said last month, according to an article in the New York Times, said last month at a conference in Washington that he thought there was, at best, a 50-50 chance of negotiating such a comprehensive agreement. On Sunday, he said he had no illusions that a long-term deal would be reached easily.
Yeah.
Will they
keep their word? I mean, right.
Will we be able to verify that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Reagan said, trust but verify. And right. Whether or not they can do that is, I mean, I think they really wanted this deal.
Iran. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did I say something?
Yes. I mean, Obama really wanted this deal. Yeah, Kerry wanted this deal also.
I meant we wanted the deal.
It doesn't seem like much of a deal, though, does it?
Well, I mean, who are we? I mean, this again is this whole problem, Raymond, of our not really knowing what agreement has been arrived at.
Right,
here.
But the Iranian foreign minister says, quote, as in the New York Times, as this game is played in our court, we cannot lose, he said on Iranian state television on Sunday. Nuclear enrichment is our right. These interconnections can be removed in a day and connected again in a day. So if that is in fact the case, what kind of a deal do we have? We lighten sanctions, and then when that deal is done, if they even adhere to it to begin with, bam, back to enrichment.
Well, they're under a tremendous amount of pressure. The political establishment, including the supreme leader in Iran, are under tremendous pressure. The economy is in the tank. The people don't like it. You know, the Iranian people are very sharp, and they are not incapable of overturning what they have created. And I think the supreme leader is aware of it. I think the fact that he allowed a moderate to reformist prime minister to win the election. Remember, they knock people out all the time. They say, you can't run, you can't run, you can't run.
Right.
So when they say you can run to a guy who clearly takes a different line than they've been going at, they're hurting. And they knew they had to do something. So now they create this better place to be. And we're talking about, what, Joe's $7 or $8 billion of sanctions that have been killing them. And that gets put back in. So that's the story. They needed that. Whether if we do consummate the deal, and if it looks like they could do it again in a day, and they do it, whether we, you know, this may go down with Obama, much like some of the Jimmy Carter stuff went down when he was the president.
Right. I like the line in the Times where they say the interim agreement is, in effect, an elaborate pause button.
Yeah, that's been a metaphor they've used, and it kind of gives everybody a chance to cool off and maybe cool down some of the rhetoric that Ray was citing, you know, where they're you know, raising their fists and saying we have the right to enrich uranium and uranium, et cetera, et cetera. It really is a country that's been under great economic duress because of these sanctions that they've endured for years now. And so this will actually allow internal politics to cool in Iran, and that might open the door towards a longer term kind of, you know, it's not going to be warm and fuzzy, and no one expects it to be. But if there could be some kind of coexistence that they're not a hot spot anymore, that would be quite an achievement. And don't you think that's the appeal of
Mike,
all this?
Can they take it back, though? I mean, here's what. Let's say we all move forward and they get the $7 billion of sanctions removed. Can we replace those $7 billion of sanctions if we want to, you know, by snapping our fingers with our allies and the others? And then, by the way, I think there were some cracks, you know, in the sanctions with some of the other folks who deal with it. And likewise, can they, once the economy heats up in Iran, can they turn around and, you know, just say, thumb their noses at us? But let's remember that supreme leader is the direct descendant of Khomeini in terms of intellectual
descent. Ayatollah Khomeini. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His rhetoric and his belief system has to be, you know, seen in that light.
Well, people do evolve, and you know, in 1980, when the Ayatollah took over and American was the great Satan and all that, it wasn't that long ago, but, you know, the people, if you can believe the reports that come out, because they do control the media reports quite a bit, but the reports that leak out that are not the sanctioned reports shows that the people in Iran love America. They love the freedom, they love the culture, and they want to, you know, they want to experience more freedom. And that really was the thing that kind of broke down the old Soviet Union. It was the people's own desires that bubbled up and allowed for change. So
I think you make a terrific point, really. But the one thing that you wonder about is if called upon in the name of national interest— Does that trump that's what you describe as love? You know, for the United States, we've been insulted. I mean, how many times have we seen that?
I don't think they like the U.S. government, but they love aspects of the American culture and the freedom and the products and the fast food.
The stuff, sure.
Well, no, that's true.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about many other issues. We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. It is a Monday morning, and we have an august panel with us this morning. Ray's looking around. Raymond, Raymond Graff.
It's January.
Raymond,
it's a beautiful day.
But we're in Osage County. We'll get to the Golden Globes later. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartuck is here. And the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us as well. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike is filling in for Libby. Libby was not able to be here because she was
stranded in Buffalo.
Stranded or somewhere. But she's in the car now, and she just emailed me, and she said, Alan, I think the recent Pew study had us at 3%, meaning the Jewish population.
I don't think it's true.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just...
2-3
I think it's less than 2.
She said, we'll see you next week. Anyway, so that's that was that letter.
I love her.
We welcome your letters at roundtable at WAMC.org.
Don't get me wrong. I love Libby.
Roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike Spain, let's talk about the big state story that has made headlines. There has been a resignation.
Yes. Well, a retirement.
A retirement. That's right. I did note that.
More time with
retirement.
His family.
Yeah. This is very young.
Yes. He was 62. Some people retire at 62. This is Assemblyman Dennis Gabrzak from Western New York, from DePew. He's a Democrat in the State Assembly. And this all stems from revelations back first in the Times Union on December 20th that four women on his staff, former members of his staff, stepped forward to accuse him of sexual harassment and creating what essentially was a hostile workplace in his assembly office here in Albany. And they made some very specific allegations, and they filed a notice of claims, you know, giving them the right to pursue a lawsuit against him. Then three more women stepped forward since then. He has been silent about the allegations, and what speaks volumes was that last week when the governor gave his State of the State, his seat was empty. He did not show up for that. Dennis Gabrzak did not show up for that event. And his attorney had said that he was going to be here this week for the opening session. Word came out yesterday afternoon that he is retiring. He is going to continue to fight the allegations of sexual harassment. But in his statement, he does say that there was never any intent on his part to sexually harass any member of his staff. He acknowledged there was, quote, mutual banter and exchanges that took place that should not have taken place because it is inappropriate in the workplace. So there is something to the allegations. The governor had said pretty much, Assemblyman, if you don't step forward and defend yourself, you should quit. And this is essentially what he has done. Of course, it comes within a year of the great scandals in the legislature, starting earlier in 2013 when an assemblyman from Brooklyn, Vito Lopez, was forced to resign after revelations that he had sexually harassed members of his staff. And Assembly Speaker Silver was involved in brokering a payment of over $100,000, most of it taxpayer money, to the two women who accused then Assemblyman Lopez. And then later, when this came out, Assembly Speaker Silver apologized and said he would change his ways. He would bring these things more out in the open. And he was pushing for an investigation of Dennis Gabrzak when this happened.
Can I ask a question that I realize may be fraught with danger, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And that is, it seems in these cases, and not just in New York State, but whenever these cases happen where there is someone and there's an abuse of power and there's a call of sexual harassment or some other misdeed, It seems that certainly we in the press, that the story ends when the person retires or leaves or goes to jail or whatever the case may be. They're done, okay? So they say, okay, he's now retired and he will strongly, what do you say,
he'll defend himself
sure. against these against these charges.
Well, he's not going to get any choice if they
sue him. But my question is, you never really hear the end of it. It seems like the end game is to get him to retire, you know, get him out.
Absolutely.
And then you don't hear any more about the charges. And my question is, well, okay, what about these women who are sexually harassed?
What do they actually
they have recourse. I mean, they can go to the civil courts.
But that's the stuff you never hear about. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, it probably many times in these. We did hear about Vito Lopez. He ran for city council and lost.
Yes.
That's another story.
Well, sometimes they keep coming to the trough, as it were.
Let's give a little context here. It's interesting in that Vito Lopez was one of the very, very, very top politicians in New York State. He controlled Brooklyn. He was the Brooklyn boss. He was the guy who, you know, you wanted to be a judge, go see Vito. You know, all of those, those things were incredibly important. And he was a huge part of Shelley Silver's majority. In other words, the people who were assembly folks from Brooklyn were loath to cross. And Shelley has had, you know, some leadership challenges, not serious, nothing ever got anywhere. So the context here is that Shelley defends Lopez. Now they all learn, for political reasons, among other things, now they all learn that this isn't going to fly. The New York POST, even, and the Daily News and the Times and everybody, they're saying, no, you shouldn't have done that, Shelley. And Shelley, I think, learns his lesson. And they say, we're going to do it differently from now on.
Well, they did. They did it differently in this case.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. The finger is not being pointed now at Shelley Silver. The finger is being pointed there. But Buffalo, it's Buffalo, right?
Yeah, Buffalo area, DePue.
DePue is important to the governor. This governor is spending more time, you know, joking around here, more time in Buffalo than, you know, anywhere else, because it's become a huge and important place for him to be in terms of his coming election and the rest. So it could not have been easy for him to jump on to the case here, but he knew as well as anybody that this really had to be answered.
Well, it's not over. You know, just to get back to the
question,
I mean, the Assembly's Ethics Committee kind of just drops their investigation because he resigned.
Sure.
But the Joint Committee on Public Ethics, you know, can investigate this up to 6 months afterwards.
Jay Cope, and they.
You know, currently have an active investigation. It doesn't have to stop. It would be, I think, serve the public interest to, you know, examine how many of these allegations surfaced and were ignored, and sort of looking at the culture and the endemic problems of the way everything works. But this is not a Vito Lopez. I mean, he wasn't a key guy in Silver's leadership or anything like that. It's probably amounts to an embarrassment for the Assembly at a time when there's been lots of embarrassments for the state legislature. So, there will be some kind of settlement. It'll probably make its way to the news, or it'll probably be one of those, we've settled this and we're not saying anything about it.
Well, let's say Jay Cope does come up with something. So what? In other words, we know it's – wait a second. Don't misinterpret me. We know it's important, and we know this shouldn't go on. But Jay Cope will come out. What will you give it in the Times Union? Will be a five-column splash headline? I don't think so.
If Jay Cope has an opportunity to, bear all the things that happened here – pardon the pun, no pun intended.
I caught it.
But basically illuminate what happened with the intention of showing how serious it has gotten and be a tell people what went on and make sure that something like that doesn't happen
again. It's important.
I think it has value.
Yeah. No, I didn't say it didn't have value. I said
maybe not a five.
Responding, I was responding to Joe's question as to why it goes away.
We're going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll continue after this short break.
Support comes from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center, a master's in social work, working to prepare students with the knowledge and skills to serve diverse populations in their communities. Hudson-Valley.adelphi.edu. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery.
The roundtable and our panel discussion. Joining us this morning, Ray Graff, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your thoughts as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. There was an interesting article from Howard Kurtz that was published on FoxNews.com that says, when does bombast become bullying? The same national media that gave Chris Christie a great ride is now leaving tire tracks on his back. What's more, the very conduct that forged his image as a tough-talking, no-nonsense, in-your-face Jersey guy is now being cited as evidence of the kind of vindictiveness on display in the George Washington Bridge scandal. In fairness, Christie's larger-than-life persona, more than the specifics of his one term in Trenton, is at the heart of his political appeal, and the one-time prosecutor has always walked a fine line between being a smartass and being a jackass. Now in the time it takes to flash an easy pass, he's gone from chief Springsteen fan to Tony Soprano. And the article goes on.
He spares nothing.
He spares nothing. It's very funny. But my question is, the story's been out there now for 4 or 5 days, and as Mike said during the break, the defenders were out yesterday, on all the Sunday news shows, and so Alan, where do you think we are on this right now?
Well, I was one who was absolutely wrong about Chris Christie. I truly thought he was going to be the candidate, and I thought it was going to be Christie versus Hillary, I don't think that any longer. I don't see where this goes for him. But let's assume for a second he survives this mess, but let's assume for another second that somebody drops the dime, that somebody says, he knew. They bring up a guy, one of the assistants, and they say, "Okay, we're giving you immunity, so you can't plead the fifth." Did you ever tell the governor? Did the governor know? And if the answer to that is yes, goodbye, it's over, because then he would have lied to everybody and would have said. So the big issue, I think, he's done. But because it happened on his watch, he got very little sympathy for this extraordinary 90-minute or whatever it was, thing that he put out there. You would have thought he would have done a little better. Rudy Giuliani checks in with some.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
With some caveats, by the way.
Yes.
With some caveats.
So you have to be very careful.
Yeah. Well, that's right. But
meaning you have to tell the truth.
But I'm fascinated by Kurtz. Because Kurtz, of course, I always thought he did a good job, with his blog. Now he's gone to Fox. And, now he fits into the Fox group of people. And
he's still a good writer, though.
No, he is. But when I know enough about the Fox people to say that if something is coming from any one person at Fox, with the exception of Juan Williams, and even there sometime, that you better think it through in terms of what the Fox line here is going to be.
How does it fit in?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't think there's much to the story other than that he's done. He's done.
Is Fox looking for another candidate to back? Because there's a lot of support for him.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's done. I mean, let's see what the federal prosecutor comes up with. You know, the Daily News after that press conference, the headline, pathetic, I think that's a little over the line. I mean, he stated his case. If it's not true, indeed pathetic. But so far, we have to say what he said was true, that he did not know.
My dear friend, what if...
watch out.
No. I feel that way.
Wind
right?
up the pitch.
What if it is true? What everything
then
he said
done.
Was
You're
true.
Right.
No. What if it is true that he gave a press conference, he said, I didn't know till the last minute, something I find extraordinarily hard to believe.
Okay.
Right.
It's his watch. It's okay. his government.
All
it's
right.
his people All who right. really screwed the whole thing up. Why isn't that held against him?
Well, perhaps it should be, if it's his watch. But let's remember the double standard here in the press that... You know, the president of the United States, on his watch, rolled out a complete debacle of a health care rollout. Hideously bad. It's on his watch. So is there a double standard here?
Well, wait a second. First of all, I don't agree with you about, I agree with you about the rollout, but I certainly don't agree with you about the program.
Well, I didn't say the program. I said the rollout.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. But let's assume for a single second that Obama, as we all have said to our kids, two wrongs don't make a right, that Obama screwed that up. That was a policy issue. That was an implementation issue. This is something else. This is out-and-out corruption on the part of several major players within his administration. And that's a big difference, Ray, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's two possibilities here. One is that something will come out, like you said, Alan, and it will prove that he lied, and that'll be the end. Nothing will come out to dispute what he asserted during his long press conference. But he's very damaged still.
Absolutely.
For everything you said, he's got a lot of rebuilding to do. He'll have to. I mean, you know, the half-life of politics these days is a lot
sure.
shorter. I mean, you know, it used to take 10, 15 years for a politician to sort of emerge from the shadows. Now, I don't know, 6 months to a year.
Yes.
He still could rebuild it. He could, you know, come back strong, put new people in, put bright, non-offensive people into key jobs, and he could rebuild his image. And if nothing else comes out, he might have a shot. But he is damaged.
If there are rogue elements, okay, in one, and I'm not defending Christie because if he knew, you're right, he's done. But if there are rogue elements in one's administration that go over the line, for instance, Sandy Berger, who stole documents, literally stole them, had them, under his coat at the end of the Clinton administration, does that reflect badly on President Clinton?
Again, as I know you talk to your kids all the time.
No, say, this is bad. No,
two wrongs don't make a right.
Yes, but the bad here is by the press, who has a tremendous double standard. The Daily News saying...
Berger.
I disagree, right? I mean, in this particular case, this was his internal team. These are the people closest to him.
These are the people that he communicates with, that he's in the car with.
Yeah. I'm not defending
that. No, but I mean, it's there's bad stuff. I mean, the IRS scandal. A lot of people have said, Obama had the IRS scandal.
On his watch.
Yeah, on his watch. But, I mean, that's still many, many levels away from him. He's insulated from that. I'm not saying that excuses it. I'm not saying it's not a terrible thing. But with this particular case, he had his own appointment to the Port Authority resigned last month. I mean, he knew this.
Two of them. And when they resigned, said the New York Times,
right.
When they resigned, he didn't say, ooh, how come my two top guys who I put over there are resigning?
And he just found out about this 24 hours before the press conference? It's just so implausible. I mean, either he's so, you know, got his head buried in the sand so deep and he's not looking like he should be looking at everything around him, or he's misleading us.
Or he's trusting that the people around him are telling the truth.
He's a terribly gullible man.
Okay, well, again, this is the press attacking a guy who is so far not guilty. If he's guilty... Have at it. Put pathetic on the front page of the Daily News.
See, but I think he is guilty.
All right, well, you're the judge, jury, and executioner.
No. Come on, Ray. You know how much I value.
You still have an opinion.
You know how valuable I think you are here.
Oh, that's lovely.
No, I mean it. For raising all these points, you are. We couldn't do without you. But I think he's guilty. Maybe not of knowing, but he certainly is guilty of running a bad administration.
Perhaps
that we know.
But
right?
the other thing too that I don't know either way. I don't know either way. But when you start to try to make a case for him, the thing that keeps on coming into my mind is that one line in the press conference about how he fired the top aide, this woman who'd been with him since the very beginning.
Yeah.
Called her stupid.
He never talked to her. He claimed he never talked to her. He said he didn't want to find out any information. He didn't want to have a discussion. That doesn't ring true to me. It just doesn't seem like a natural, normal reaction.
Right. Let's just wait and see what happens. That's
absolutely.
All.
I agree with you. But when you try to make a case in your mind of how you would react to a situation, somebody in that administration, somebody in any group,
I agree with you, is going
to question somebody before they just flat out fire them and find out and try to get to the bottom of something, especially when you're going to go on national television for 90 minutes and
couldn't agree more.
Tear your guts out.
But let's wait and see what the federal prosecutor says.
Absolutely.
And then have at it, man. Throw your stones.
And Mike, you may know more about, and I don't want to throw stones if it's not necessary. You know,
no, but I mean, if he's guilty.
And Mike, you may know this. Weren't there supposed to be more emails out on Friday? Did those come out?
I think thousands of documents came out. I think people are still going through them, but there are a lot were made public. I don't know if anything was
but nothing held. Major.
Yeah. No, so far nothing has.
It was like piranha fish. If there was something in the mic,
well, that's
I've always been astounded.
Yeah.
They hand 1,000 pages to a reporter.
Well, and
say,
a lot
here
been,
it is.
A lot has been said about the culture of the New York City press. You know, the media in New York City, and you've been around. You've all been around it. I mean, when these guys come into town, they take no prisoners. They just push their way up to the front and ask anything they want. I mean, it is an aggressive, thorough group. And if there was anything in there, I think we'd know about it already.
Well, I have to say, I read the Times constantly, all day long and in the evenings. I have never seen anything like this. They are really.
If you didn't know better,
they're pulling no punches.
You would think they were out to get the guy.
Yeah. Exhibit A.
We're talking about five articles at the same time, four articles at the same time. Amazing.
Interesting
really,
stuff.
I'm going to bet they get a Pulitzer for this. Yeah. I bet they will.
Well, I mean, the Jersey papers have been all over it.
Oh, yeah, the Bergen Record. They started it.
But it was a man who could potentially have been president. Now it's changing. It's changing history. It's changing the course.
I absolutely agree with that.
And well, let's see where it goes. Yeah. A lot more. Which is good. Well, we'll have panels in the future. We can talk much more about this.
Oh, great!
There you go, Raymond. I know you're happy. Gentlemen, thank you very much, Mike. Again, a sincere thanks for filling in this morning.
That's it.
I appreciate it.
That's all we did.
We did like that. Like that.
It goes quick.
We'll be back. We'll be back tomorrow and do it again.
Oh, good.
Excellent. Coming up next, more show. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.